Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Thank you, Tim. I'm Jim Dolan, your host for this hour on the RTC Weekly Download, the old-time radio place on the internet. At least when you're listening to downloadable podcasts. I want to remind you right now, though, that we do have a stream running, the old-time radio stream of the Radio Theater Channel. That's at www.oldtimeradiolisten.com. And you can hear programs in series form 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's oldtimeradiolisten.com. First up today, we have an episode of Dragnet and The Big Look. We will be following that with an episode of Cloak and Dagger with an interesting bulletin at the beginning. It seems that some old problems are always with us, and the bulletin is about Korea. So be sure to listen to that at the very beginning of Cloak and Dagger, coming up in about 30 minutes' time. But now, here's Jack Webb and Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet, brought to you by Chesterfield. For the taste you want, the mildness you want, a really refreshing smoke, buy America's most popular two-way cigarette, Chesterfield. They satisfy millions.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. You get a call that a woman has been badly beaten. She can't describe her assailant. He's still at large. Your job, find him. For the taste you want, the mildness you want, for a really refreshing smoke every time, you should change to Chesterfield. On every count, they satisfy millions. They'll satisfy you. Chesterfield is the cigarette proved highest in quality, low in nicotine. The cigarette tested and approved by 30 years of scientific tobacco research. The cigarette with the taste and mildness you want. Yes, the Chesterfield you smoke today is the best cigarette ever made. Best for you. It all adds up to Chesterfield's world-famous slogan. They satisfy. Regular or king size, try Chesterfield today.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, January 14th. It was raining in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Friday. We're on our way out from the office, and it was 11:47 p.m. when we got to 7982 Oakwood Avenue. Front door.
What is it?
Police officers, we'd like to see Miss Griffin.
How do I know?
Beg your pardon?
How do I know you're cops?
Here's our identification.
Hand it here.
Pardon?
Pass it through the door. I want to see it good.
All right, here you are.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, your guess is as good as mine.
Come on in.
Thank you.
Hurry up. Don't let all the rain in.
Yes, ma'am.
I wonder if I have my identification back, please.
Take your coats off right here. I don't want you tracking water through the house.
All right. Could I have that identification card?
You don't mind my being so careful about what's happened here. I've got to take all precautions, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
Come on into the sitting room.
I'll take that card. Thank
Which
you.
Which one of you is Sergeant Friday?
I am.
You're the one who called.
That's right.
Who's he?
It's my partner, Frank Smith.
Well, sit down. Here's your card.
Thank you.
Get you anything? Cup of coffee? Maybe some hot cocoa?
No, thank you.
Well, suit yourself. Now, what is it you want?
We understand you know Mrs. Kieran.
We're neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you can tell us what happened here tonight.
Seems like you'd have the story, being cops and all.
Well, we'd like to hear you tell it, ma'am.
All right. I was here tonight watching the TV, just gone out to the kitchen to get a plate of snacks for the late show. You know, kind of like to munch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all of a sudden, I heard this scream real loud. I wasn't watching the television right then, so at first I thought it was from the set, you know, like a drama.
Yes, ma'am.
Didn't think nothing about it right then. Got myself all settled for the movie, and then I heard another scream. That's when I knew there was something wrong.
How's that?
There was a quiz on the television. No reason for any screams. Right then, there was another one. Then I knew it was from next door.
Yeah.
So I got my coat and umbrella and went over there.
I see.
Knocked on the door, but didn't get no answer. Well, I went into the house. All dark, not a light on. Went right in and called to Mrs. Kieran. Called to her.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't answer, but I could kind of hear something off to the back of the place.
Uh-huh.
Sounded like somebody crying. Kind of like a whimper. Soft.
Yeah.
It came from the back of the house in the bedroom.
You didn't see anybody else in the house when you went in, did you?
If I had, I'd have told you before this.
Go ahead, please.
I got to the bedroom and opened the door. Couldn't see anything at first.
Uh-huh.
Then I was about to go on in, and this man jumped out at me.
He was in the bedroom, was he?
Yeah, must have been hiding in the dark and heard me coming, and he got back so I wouldn't see him. Then when I opened the door, he jumped right out, almost scared me to death.
Well, what did he do?
Just jumped at me and ran out of the house, right through the front door. I heard it slam.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard the crying again. It was sort of off to one side of the room. I couldn't see right away where it was coming from.
Uh-huh.
I turned on the light, and right away I saw her. She was laying on the floor.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, it was just terrible. Room was all tore up. Things all thrown around, a real mess, and her laying right there in the middle of it, all beat up. Looked like whoever done it had tried to kill her.
What'd you do then?
Called the police. Dialed O, told the operator to send a policeman. Wasn't long before they was here. It seemed like there was 100 of them all over the place.
All right, Mrs. Griffin. I wonder if you can give us a description of the man you saw.
Other officers asked me the same thing. Isn't much I can tell you. Just all of a sudden, he was there, and then he was gone.
You're pretty sure it was a man, though, huh?
Certainly. I guess I know a man when I see one. Been married to one for 22 years.
Yes, ma'am. Can you tell us anything about him?
I just got a glimpse of him. Not good. I can't tell you anything but how he looked. He was standing in the dark when I come in. Next thing I knew, he jumped past me and went out the front door.
Yes, ma'am.
Would you know him again if you saw him?
I don't think so. Just a glimpse, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Should like to help. There isn't much more I can tell you.
All right, ma'am.
How is Mrs. Kieran? She gonna be okay?
Well, she'll be in the hospital for a few days, but she's gonna be all right.
Isn't she able to tell you something about the man who did this?
No, ma'am.
Seems like she'd be able to describe him. Must have been there for a good half hour.
How do you figure that?
Must have been at least that long from the time I heard the first scream till I got over there. First off, I didn't think it was real. Thought it was on television.
Yes, ma'am, you told us.
Must have been a half hour.
Mm-hmm. Now, did Mrs. Kieran have any enemies that you knew of?
Well, there's some people who didn't like her. A couple right here in the neighborhood, but none of them that would do a thing like this.
How'd she and her husband seem to get along?
Well, you mean, did they have any fights?
Yes, that's right.
All the time. Seemed like they was always battling about something.
Would you know what caused the arguments?
Oh, mostly about her and other men. He thought she was running around on him. He used to fight about it. A couple of times he said if she didn't stop, he's going to kill her.
Was that true?
You mean about her and the men?
Yes.
Well, might have been. For all I know, I didn't pay much mind to their troubles. Seems like I had too many things to keep me busy without getting mixed up in their problems.
All right, Miss Griffin, we'll leave our card with you. If you remember anything you think we'd be interested in, we'd appreciate a call from you.
If I think of anything, you get one.
Thank you, ma'am.
Don't it seem kind of funny to you?
Well, what's that?
How Mrs. Kieran can't tell you anything about the fella? Don't that strike you kind of odd?
How do you mean?
Well, if somebody is in my house for that long, I'd be able to tell something about him. Something for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I guess with the lights off, maybe she couldn't see. And then again...
Yes, ma'am?
Maybe she don't want to tell you.
Frank and I drove back to the office and put in a call to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. We talked to Dr. Sebastian and found that the victim had recovered to the point where she could be moved to her own hospital. We also talked with the officers who were with her. They told us that the woman hadn't given them any new information and that they still hadn't been able to contact her husband. While I checked the crime lab, Frank went down the hall and ran the names Irene and Tom Kieran through R&I. 2:14 a.m., we met back in the squad room.
How'd it go in the crime lab?
Oh, I got it all here. You want to take a look?
Yeah.
Beginning to look like we got a good case against the husband.
Yeah?
Well, here. Here's a picture of the room. The woman was found about here. See?
Mm-hmm.
You can see the way the stuff's scattered all around the place, all through here.
Yeah. It looks like robbery.
Well, he wanted to look that way, maybe.
What do you mean?
Well, in the dresser drawer here, the boys from the crime lab found $120 in cash. All the thief had to do was open the drawer, and he'd have seen it, too.
Oh. Well, how about the entrance?
That's something else that doesn't seem to gel. They checked all the windows and doors. There's no sign of any breaking. She must have opened the door for the thief.
Well, that means it was somebody Mrs. Kiernan knew, huh?
Yeah, it kind of looks that way.
Anything else we can use?
Well, take a look here. Here's a picture of a footprint Lee Jones found in the earth beside the path. The way it looks, the thief left the path when he ran from the house and stepped in the soft dirt.
Do us any good?
No, not much. The ground was wet. Must have been a good impression, but the rain broke down the walls. It's not much good to us now.
That's it, huh?
Yeah. Leighton Prince didn't come up with anything. How'd you do?
Well, nothing on the woman. Husband's got an arrest record.
Yeah.
Got it right here. Mrs. Karen had him pinched 18 months ago on a beating charge. Refused to prosecute. Same thing a year ago. And here, besides her complaints, he's been booked for ADW and suspicion 211.
Done any big time?
No, never drew a conviction.
Hmm.
Now, Joe, thing I don't understand, if it was her husband, why doesn't she beef him? She wasn't worried about having him arrested before.
I don't know.
There's something wrong about it.
Well, there's got to be an answer someplace. You tagged the stats office?
Yeah, I gave him what we had on the guy. They're going to start a run on the MO in the morning. Better get the rest of this information down to him.
Yeah, we can drop it off on the way out, huh?
Right.
You got that list of the husband's friends?
Uh-huh.
Well, let's talk to them. Maybe they can tell us where he is.
Okay.
Hot shot. I'll get it.
What is it?
Stats office are going to have to wait, I guess.
Huh?
1824 Studio Court.
Well, that's a couple of blocks from Kieran's. What's the call?
Woman slugged. We left the office and we drove over to the address, code 3. It was a small house set well back on the lot. When we got there, a felony car out of Hollywood Division had already arrived and the crime lab had been called. The victim was identified as a Mrs. Milo Hudson, age 42. An ambulance was dispatched from Hollywood Receiving Hospital and she was given first aid. She'd been beaten about the head and shoulders. As soon as the attendants had finished, Frank and I talked to her.
If you'll just tell us what happened, please.
Awful thing. Most awful thing ever happened to me.
Yes, ma'am. Did you get a good look at the man?
Pretty good. Not real good, but I did see him.
Could you describe him for us?
How do you mean?
Well, how tall was he?
I guess about as tall as you.
Be about 5'11"?
If that's how tall you are.
Yes, ma'am. How about his weight? Was he heavy or light?
About like him.
That'd be about 180, huh?
I guess so. I don't know, but I guess that's about what it is.
What about his face? Did you see that?
Yes, sir. Got a good look.
You'd know him again if you saw him, would you?
I certainly would. Never forget that face. Not if I live to be 100, I'll never forget it.
Now, could you give us a good description of him?
Had dark hair, almost black, kind of curly. Little wave right here in front.
Mm-hmm.
Had blue eyes, dark blue, might have been kind of hazel color, dark.
Mm-hmm. Was he clean shaven?
You mean, did he have a mustache?
Yes, ma'am.
No, didn't have anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything about him that might make it easier for us to identify him?
I don't think I know what you mean.
Well, did he have any scars, any birthmarks, anything like that?
Let me think. Seems there was something, but I can't remember what.
Did this man say anything to you?
Not at first. When he came in, he didn't say a word, just pointed the gun at me and motioned back into the house, like he wanted me to get back there.
Uh-huh, but he did say something to you later, is that right?
Yes. Well, we got to the bedroom, and he started to go through the place. I told him he better get out, because my husband would be coming in any minute.
I see.
He smiled and said he knew George didn't get home till 4:30.
He used your husband's name, didn't he?
Yes. Come to think of it, he did. I didn't pay much attention to it before, but he did.
Do you think you ever saw that man before?
Not that I remember.
But you're sure you'd know him if you saw him again?
I sure would. See, I remember what it was about him.
Yes?
You know, you wanted something about him that'd make it easier to tell if he was the right man?
That's right.
He had a scar. Small one right here, by his eye. Made it look like his left eye was real big. Gave him a funny look.
Mm-hmm.
That what you meant?
Yes, ma'am.
I wonder if you'd come down to City Hall and go through some pictures for us.
Well, I want to do everything I can to help. I'm supposed to check with my doctor. If he says it's all right, I'll be there. When would you want me?
Well, if you could make it in the morning.
If the doctor says it's all right, I'll be there.
Okay, thanks, Mrs. Hudson.
We can send a car for you if you like.
Might be better if you did. George likes to sleep late and I don't drive.
All right, ma'am. We'll call you in the morning.
Sure hope you can catch the person who's done this. Lord knows how many more people he's going to hurt.
Yes, ma'am.
Just seems to know all about people. When they're going to be alone and all, seems to know all about them.
Mm-hmm.
Knew right where everything in this house was all the way. Knew right down to a T.
You're sure you never saw him before, is that right?
Positive. You don't forget that kind of face. See it once and you remember it all your life.
Well, has there been anybody new in the neighborhood?
I don't understand what you mean.
Well, like any salesman, door-to-door canvassers, anything like that.
Residential neighborhood like this, there's always somebody around trying to sell something. Must be a couple of people a day come to the door. But I'm sure the man who hit me wasn't one of them.
All right, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Not at all, Sergeant. I want to do all I can to help you get him.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea who he is, where to find him?
Not very much, Miss Hudson.
Terrible to think about it. A man like that roaming the streets. Woman isn't safe in her own home anymore.
We'll get to him, ma'am.
I should hope so. But what do we do in the meantime? Just sit here and wait for this lunatic to kick the doors down?
Well, we'll do everything we we can.
Awful. I'll never forget how he came in here, shoved me around. Just never forget it.
Well, that makes you even.
What?
He won't either. We got out a supplemental broadcast carrying the description of the suspect, and then we continued to talk to the latest victim. She was unable to come up with any additional information. 4:30 a.m. The crew from the crime lab finished up their investigation, and Frank and I went back to the office. We left the description of the suspect at the stats office, and we asked R&I to check the oddity file for a possible identification on the scar that the suspect had. 5:21 a.m. We signed out of the office. The next day at 9:26 a.m., we met with Chief Brown and Captain Donahoe, and we went over the case with them. Because of the method of operation used, it became apparent that the thief was acquainted with the habits of the people in the neighborhood. Two additional teams of men were assigned to the case, and they began to canvass the area for information on people who appeared to be loitering in the vicinity. It was also decided to assign three more police units to patrol the streets during the night hours. We checked all FI cards that had been filed in the area. That afternoon, Milo Hudson came down to the office and went through the mug books, but she was unable to make an identification. She was shown pictures of Tom Kieran, the husband of the first victim, but she stated positively that he was not the man who'd beaten her. The list of possibles came back from the stats office and was checked without result. A week went by. In spite of the additional men involved, the suspect hit three more times. In each case, the M.O. was the same. In each case, he escaped. However, we were able to get a little more information on him. We had the artist in Crime Analysis Division draw up a composite picture of the suspect, and we had it distributed to all officers in the city. The daily papers ran it on their front pages. Thursday, January 24th, 5:20 p.m. Frank and I got back to the office from dinner.
I want to call Faye and tell her it looks like a late night.
All right, I'll check the book.
Anything?
No. A caller from Pinky.
Yeah?
He and Leitner talked to that magazine salesman.
Check out?
No. The guy just got in town a couple of days ago. Description's pretty far off.
Oh.
I got it. Robbery Friday. Yes, ma'am, that's right. Mm-hmm. Well, we can take it. All right. What's that address again? Yes, that's Studio Court. Yes, ma'am, we'll be right out. No, don't do anything. If he wants to leave, don't try to stop him. That's right, we'll be right there. Woman out on Studio Court.
Yeah.
Says she thinks the suspect's in her house now.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
Meet the Tom Harmons. You know Tom as Michigan's All-American football star, now a top sports announcer. Mrs. Harmon is the motion picture and television star Elise Knox. They're typical of people everywhere who are saying, Chesterfield's for me.
I like regular-sized Chesterfields. Have for years. They're best for me, at least I think so, because of that Chesterfield quality.
That's the way I feel about them, too. I've always smoked Chesterfields. Now I go for the king size. Guess I like a longer smoke.
No king-size cigarette satisfies like king-size Chesterfield. For the taste you want, the mildness you want, a really refreshing smoke every time, change to Chesterfield. Regular or king-size, America's most popular two-way cigarette.
Frank and I left the office and drove over to the address we'd been given on the phone. As we pulled up in front of the house, we could see a man standing on the porch. We got out of the car and we went up the walk. At the front door, we met the woman who'd called. She said that the man had rung the doorbell and had tried to force his way into the house. She went on to say that her husband wasn't home and that she'd managed to stall the man until we got there. We took him back to the city hall and talked to him in the interrogation room. He identified himself as Victor Nadell. Frank went down the hall to run him through records and identification.
A lot of trouble you guys are causing me. No reason for all this.
What were you doing at that house?
Trying to earn a living.
You have to force your way in to do that?
That old broad's off her rocker. I didn't try to get into the place.
She says you did.
She's flipped.
What do you do for a living?
I work. You know another way?
What kind of work?
Salesman.
What do you sell?
Right now I'm selling lots.
Real estate?
Yeah.
Where?
Tract out in the desert.
Who do you work for?
I don't think I'm going to tell you that. You're not going to get them in no trouble.
We're going to find out anyway. Now, why don't you save yourself a lot of grief and tell us?
You get paid, you dig it out.
You ever been arrested?
A couple of times.
Where?
Oklahoma.
What for?
Call it hijacking.
Robbery?
Same thing.
You ever do any time?
No, they couldn't nail it down.
Where do you live?
Got a room down on East 5th, room and privileges.
Who do you work for?
That's your job.
How long you been in town?
A couple of months.
You been working for this real estate company since you got here?
Yeah, I got the job a couple of days after I got off the train.
How'd you get it?
Answered an ad.
You ever see that woman out on Studio Court before?
No.
You don't know her?
I told you.
She'd have no reason to tie a bad beef on you, would she?
She's doing it, ain't she?
It's kind of silly without any reason in it.
Well, she's a woman. That's all I need.
All right, empty your pockets out on the table here.
Why?
Come on. We're not playing games here. Empty your pockets.
Hey, what's this all about? What are you guys trying to prove with all this strong
arm? We're trying
stuff?
To find out why you wanted to break into that house.
I told you I didn't break into the house. That old harpy's out of her mind to tell you a thing like that. I don't know why, but she's got it in for me. Wants to see me get into trouble.
You said you didn't know her.
That's right.
You never saw her before.
That's
huh?
what I said.
And why'd she build a thing like this?
I told you, I don't know. It's a lie. I walked up to the door and asked if I could talk to her. Just try to talk to her. Right away, she starts yelling at me to get away, get off the property.
Why didn't you leave then?
I wanted to make a sale.
You must have figured she wasn't interested.
I needed to make a sale. I haven't been doing too good. I had to make a sale or I'd have lost my job.
That's a reason to act like a tough guy, isn't it?
All I did was try to talk to her, talk her into buying
a lot. Well, you got a funny way of doing it.
I thought maybe she was going to call the police, make a complaint. If she'd have done that, I'd have lost my job, sure.
And that's all there is to it.
I'm telling you the truth. You got to believe me.
You've been working the neighborhood before?
No, it's the first time. I've been kind of sick the last week. This is the first time out for me. First time I've been around here.
Where'd you work before?
Westlake area.
You ever have any trouble there?
No, none.
Why'd you make the switch then?
Just thought I'd try a new territory, see if I could make up for the week I lost.
Mm-hmm. You got anybody who'll back up this story for you?
People in my rooming house, I'll tell you. They'll say I was there all week, some kind of flu, they'll tell you.
Joe.
Yeah.
See you in a minute.
Yeah.
You want me to wait here?
That's right. Just sit there. What do you got?
Well, looks like we nailed the wrong guy.
What do you figure?
Call just came in. Radio car picked up a fella out on Rosewood Avenue.
Yeah.
Caught him in a house trying to beat a woman to death.
How about the description?
Matches the suspect right down the line.
Victor Nadell was booked in at the main jail pending further investigation. We were unable to connect him with any robbery, but Perry Thomas of the city attorney's office issued a complaint charging violation of Section 415 of the Penal Code. At 7:46 p.m., the suspect we'd gotten a call about arrived at the city hall. He was fingerprinted and checked through R&I. We found that he'd served a year and a day in New York State for breaking and entering. He'd served a sentence in the state of Washington on similar charges. Physically, he matched the description we'd gotten from the victims. While Pinky Meade and Dee Leitner contacted the women and asked them to come down to the office, Frank and I questioned the suspect. Rudolph Marnell, is that your true name?
Yes, sir.
Where do you live?
My home's out in Hollywood.
It's a big place. Narrow it down, will you?
Ledgewood Drive, 2917.
You ever been arrested?
Yeah, you know that. It was a mistake, though.
Both times?
Well, the second time was because of the first.
What do you mean by that?
Now, once you've done time, it seems like anything goes wrong, the cops are on your back, just like this.
Mm-hmm. You want to tell us what happened out there tonight?
You mean on Rosewood?
That's right.
Big misunderstanding.
Well, you tell us about it, will you?
I wanted to use her phone. I don't know. I guess she got scared about something. All I wanted to do was make a call.
How'd you ask her?
Regular way. Told her I was in trouble. Asked if I could phone. Next thing I know, she's screaming up a storm. There's cops all around me.
According to this report, you didn't stop when you were told. Is that right?
I guess so.
Well, is it or isn't it?
Yeah.
Why'd you run?
Well, I didn't know what was going on. I got a record. I had enough to do with cops to last me the rest of my life. As soon as I heard the sirens, I took off. I guess I didn't hear that cop tell me to stop.
Yeah. Kind of hard to believe.
Well, you believe the woman who says I tried to slug her. You believe her, but you don't believe me. You see, that's what I meant.
What's that?
Well, as soon as you fall once, there's a dozen cops right behind you all the time waiting to stomp on you.
You ever figure that you helped build it that way?
Well, it reads good, but you ain't got nobody on your tail.
All right. Now tell us again about tonight.
I told the cops who picked me up. I told the cop who fingerprinted me. I already told you once. Now, how many times you want to hear it?
Until we get it the right way.
Well, how are you going
to
know?
You'll find it. Come on. Go down to the interrogation room. Go ahead. Down this way.
Go ahead. Right in there.
Sit down. All right, Marnell, now let's clean it up.
What do you mean?
You know we're going to have no trouble making you on these things. We got the victims on their way down here now. As soon as they identify you, you've had it. So save yourself a lot of time and trouble if you cop out now.
I'd like to give you a hand, Sergeant. I really would, but there's nothing I can do. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. What were you doing on January 10th?
10th?
That's right.
What day was that?
Thursday.
Gee, I don't know. It's a long time ago. It's hard to remember.
How about the 11th?
Same. I don't remember.
The 14th?
Yeah, I can tell you about that.
All right, go ahead.
I got through work and went home, met the wife, we had dinner, took in a show.
You can prove that?
Well, sure, ask my wife, she'll tell you.
All right, how about Wednesday the 16th?
Blank.
You don't remember what you were doing on the 16th of January, huh?
No, is it important?
It's going to be for you.
How about the 17th?
That'd be Thursday?
That's right.
I stayed home and watched the wrestling on television.
You can prove that, can you?
Sure, had some people in to watch the matches.
Give us their names, will
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Who was wrestling that night?
Oh, you want them all or just the main?
Well, how about Sammy Wind-Up?
Let me think. Yeah, it was a tag team match between the McLean brothers and the South Twins.
You're sure?
I'm positive.
How about the 19th? What'd you do then?
19th. That would be
Saturday.
Well, I'm off Saturday. I don't remember too good. Probably came home, sat around the house, drank beer, and loafed.
Mm-hmm. That was Saturday the 19th.
Yeah, the 19th.
How about Monday the 21st?
I bowl that night.
Where?
Lane's out on Sunset.
Bowl there all the time?
Yeah.
You bowl every Monday night?
No, not every week. Usually it's on Tuesday.
Why'd you change this week?
Well, some of the guys couldn't make it Tuesday, so we changed the day.
Mm-hmm. Anything special to you about January 14th, 17th, 21st?
Now, what do you mean special?
Well, your birthday, your anniversary, something like that?
No.
Just regular days.
That's right.
Nothing to make them stand out.
No.
Then how come you can remember what you were doing on those days? You can't give us a story to fit January 10th, 11th, 16th, or 19th.
I don't know. What are you guys trying to get me to say? What are you trying to get at?
The truth.
Well, I'm giving it to you.
We can't see it.
How come you remember those days?
I don't know. I just do.
It's kind of funny. I couldn't remember what I was doing last week. I'd have to sit down and think about it.
You didn't even have to try to remember. You knew right away, didn't you?
Like it was important for you to remember.
You keep trying to build an alibi, don't you?
Look, you asked me where I was. I told you.
Let's have the names of the people you say you're with.
You going to talk to
them? That's right.
Well, maybe they won't remember.
I think they will.
But what happens if they don't?
Then you're in big trouble.
You're holding a lot of it right now.
Let's have the names.
Sure, I've got nothing to worry about. I'll give them to you.
Here's a pencil. Paper there.
I don't know all the addresses.
We'll look them up.
You're going to have to talk to them, huh?
Sure. What's the matter? You think they won't stand behind you?
No, it's not that.
Then what is it?
Well, just that they don't know I've done time. Maybe when they find out, they'll try to get me. You know, say they weren't with me, they might do that.
Yeah, like that woman tonight.
Yeah, just like that.
People don't like you much, do they, Marnell?
Hmm?
Seems like everybody's trying to get you in trouble.
I want a lawyer.
You want to check, Frank, see if the victims are here?
Yeah. Well, what's going to happen now?
Well, we got some people we want to see you.
Who are they?
The women you beat up.
No, you can't make me on those jobs.
We think we can.
Yeah, well, you just try. You take this thing into court, and they're going to throw it right out.
That's the way you got it figured, is it?
That's right.
Go ahead, Frank. Bring him in.
All right. I said I want a lawyer.
What?
I said I want a lawyer.
Well, you'll get one.
Yeah, and a jury. I want a jury trial.
You got a choice.
You bet I have. You bring all these women down here to point me out, well, this isn't going to work. Bunch of people who don't like me, causing me trouble. People who don't like me. I want a jury trial, a judge and a jury.
All right, you'll get them. I'll make you a bet.
Hmm?
They won't like you either.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On May 16th, trial was held in Department 98, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial. Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you, George Fenneman. You know, the Chesterfield you smoke today is the best cigarette ever made, and best for you. Now, that's a fact. And to my way of thinking, it's the very reason for you to change to Chesterfield. Try them either way, regular or king size. If you try them, I think you'll say with all of us, Chesterfield's for me.
Rudolph August Marnell was filed on for 4 counts of robbery in the first degree, 5 counts of burglary in the first degree, and 5 counts of assault with intent to do great bodily injury. He was found guilty by a jury trial on all counts and received sentence as prescribed by law. Robbery in the first degree is punishable by imprisonment for a period of not less than 5 years. Burglary in the first degree is punishable by imprisonment for a period of not less than 5 years. Assault with intent to do great bodily harm is punishable by a term of from 1 to 20 years in the state penitentiary. Just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Virginia Gregg, Helen Cleave. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking. Watch an entirely different Dragnet case history each week on your local NBC television station. Please check your newspapers for the day and time. Chesterfield has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Filter cigarette smokers, here is headline news. Nationwide demand for L and M filters drops price. Now you save up to 4 cents a pack, 40 cents a carton. Now everyone can afford America's highest quality and best filter tip cigarette. Remember, only L and M's have the miracle filter tip containing alpha cellulose. You get much more flavor, much less nicotine. Buy L and M filters, the distinctive monogram cigarette, at the new low price. L and M filters. We'll be right back.
That's Dragnet from 1954, The Big Look. Now we have something interesting, so pay attention to this. This is a bulletin first about North Korea and the war going on there way back in 1950. And then when that's done, we're going to go straight into the eyes of the Buddha. So that is from 1950 as well. Here's Cloak and Dagger.
They delay the start of this program to bring you a special bulletin. From the NBC newsroom in New York, here's the latest on Korea. Seoul has been raided by American and Australian warplanes. They shot down two enemy planes, one of which was marked with a Russian red star. A spokesman says that we have made 142 raids against enemy targets in both South and North Korea in the past 24 hours. American officials say there is a serious threat from Red ground forces south of Seoul. Keep tuned to your NBC station for the later news.
Are you willing to undertake a dangerous mission behind the enemy lines, knowing you may never return alive?
What you have just heard is the question asked during the war to agents of the OSS, ordinary citizens who to this question answered, yes.
This is Cloak and Dagger.
Black warfare, espionage, international intrigue. These are the weapons of the OSS. Today's adventure, The Eyes of Buddha, concerning an American OSS agent who went deep into enemy territory to enlist the help of a nation which had declared war on the United States, is suggested by actual incidents recorded in the Washington files of the Office of Strategic Services. A story that can now be told.
In 1944, the tiny kingdom of Siam was officially at war with the United States. So there I was in March of that year in an official Siamese plane on my way to ask Siamese help in rescuing an American flyer from the Japanese. Sound crazy? You ain't heard nothing yet. The Siamese character beside me had received his master's degree at Yale and his PhD at Harvard. Major Lardol Prayadipak. I decided to call him Louis.
Look down, Lieutenant Berman, out of your window.
Yeah? What about it?
In those green forests, as you may know, still roam the ancient peacocks and the sacred elephants of Siam.
Louis, I may as well tell you right now, there are four things I know definitely about your country.
What are these, my friend?
The Siamese twins were named Aang and Chang. Siamese cats have blue eyes. Somebody wrote a book called Anna and the King of Siam.
And what is the fourth?
Tan Yak Dai Fuying Mai. The one line I know of your language, which translated means,
Do you want to meet a girl? Well, rest easy. There will be no need for you to speak more of the language. Must a ghost have need of words? Once we arrive at Bangkok, you will be spirited from one place to another, my friend, as a ghost.
Fasten your seatbelt. Kindly fasten your seatbelt.
Ah, we are coming into the Don Juan airfield.
Well, so far, this has been too easy. From Rangoon to a secret airport in Siam, where you picked me up in this plane, and here we are in Bangkok. Is this another hidden field, Louis?
No, not exactly.
What do you mean, not exactly?
Oh, I should say there are about 800 Japs on hand about the field.
Huh?
Fasten your seatbelt, Lieutenant Berman.
The official Siamese plane with the sacred white elephant painted on the side slid right across the field and taxied past hundreds of Jap soldiers guarding the runway. The hangar door at the west side of the field opened. The ground crew rolled the plane in. Then the door slid closed again, as if we had been swallowed up. Louis and I climbed out of the plane.
Lieutenant Berman, this is Lum. He will drive us to the OSS hideout in Bangkok, where you will meet the regent of Siam, the leader of the underground here.
How do you do, Lum?
I do very well. Lum suggests we wait a few minutes before leaving.
Oh, is anything wrong?
I suggest you wait here. I will return, tell you when it is safe to leave. The two Japanese officials in car right outside.
We waited. It was sweltering hot in there. And by the time Lum came back a few minutes later, my shirt was ready for the ringer.
Oversaw's gone now. Is safe. We will leave by side door. Come quickly. Car is outside.
You see, Lieutenant Berman, thus far your mission is proceeding successfully.
Better not talk too soon, Louis. We haven't reached the hideout yet.
Perhaps you are right. Ah, proceed, Lum.
Lum drove us right through the downtown district of Bangkok toward the palace, which was being used as underground headquarters. As we drove through the streets, I could see Jap pillboxes in the internment camp, and everywhere around us, walking the streets, guns in their holsters, were Japanese. Then we turned at a busy intersection, and it happened.
Lum! Lum, what is it? What is wrong with that horn?
I do not know, Major. I do not know. It stopped. Oh, will not stop.
Oh, great. Everybody's turning around to look at us. Can't you do anything about that?
A little horn. A little horn. Quiet.
Talking to it isn't going to help, Lum. Stop and yank out the wire.
A little horn. Do not blow. Do not blow.
This is very unfortunate.
My friend, you've a gift for understatement.
Lum. Lum. We are causing too much attention. Do as the American says.
A horn. Please. I beg of you. Quiet. Nice little horn. Pretty little horn.
Lum, stop the car and pull out the wires.
Oh, there's no need, Major. It has stopped by itself. All I had to do was speak nicely to it.
Oh, my aching back.
This is quite a place. Marble floors, winding staircase, just like the movies. Wait till I tell my wife about this.
The palace, set back only a little way from the street, has been underground headquarters for 2 years.
Huh?
At all hours of the day, Japanese soldiers march up and down in front of it. Yet none of them know what is going on inside.
Well, you can be sure of one thing, Louis.
What is that, Lieutenant?
I won't tell them.
After you, my friend. The servant has prepared dinner for us. You must be hungry. We will eat now.
Only a couple of miles away were camps where Allied prisoners lived on little more than bread and water. Yet here I was, an American, right under the noses of the Nips, consuming a dinner that began and ended with iced beer and included roast duck and freshwater prawns, salad, curried beef, dried fish, topped off with large bowls of fresh bananas and pieces of sumo, the Siamese improvement on grapefruit.
Ah, have you had enough to eat, Lieutenant? Would you care for something else?
Oh, no, no thanks, Louis. I've had more than enough.
Bye. Coffee. Coffee.
Hey, what's his name? Bye. He isn't very talkative, is he?
A good choice, we feel, for a servant in underground headquarters. He repeats less. Bai is a death mute. Tell me, Lieutenant Berman, what did you do before the war?
Me? Oh, I was a stunt pilot. I barnstormed all over the country in old crates and jennies, anything that had wings. I got a trunk full of tin medals for almost getting my neck busted.
Oh, I see.
Now, look, Louis, I admire good pilots. And one of General Chennault's hot flyers is a prisoner of the Japs. Somewhere around here. If anybody's going to get him out, I'd like to be the one to try it.
We will see to it that you get your chance, then.
When is the regent coming? I'm anxious to meet him.
Oh, he will be here. After midnight.
After midnight?
Yes. You see, this is the evening of the Japanese admiral's birthday. It was necessary for the regent of Siam to be there. Out of friendliness, of course.
About 12:30, he arrived. He was dressed elegantly in a white silk coat and white pongee trousers. On his head was a delicately embroidered turban. This was Luang Pradeep Manudarm, regent of Siam and head of the Siamese underground.
I trust you will forgive me for being delayed.
Oh, that's all right.
The Japanese admiral would never have forgiven me for leaving his party. Major, some more brandy for the lieutenant.
Of course.
How about your mission?
Well, several months ago, one of General Chennault's best pilots crashed on the Burma-Siam frontier. Other members of his flight reported that they saw the plane go down, settle in a spreading banyan tree,
but they didn't see it burn.
So the presumption is he is still alive, somewhere in Siam.
Yes, that's it.
Major, in the morning, drive the lieutenant to Colonel Sangwan at Camp Panjara.
Yes, excellent.
I think Colonel Sangwan will be in a position to get the information you are after.
That's great. Your Excellency, this may be a little out of order, but...
Yes?
Don't you ever get the feeling you're walking around with your head in a noose?
A very good question. Well put. I imagine I am a great mystery to the Americans of the OSS. No doubt they feel mystery shrouding our whole people.
After all, you are supposedly an ally of the Japs.
Supposedly. We are an independent nation, Lieutenant. Our people are proud and freedom-loving. Siam sits in the heart of Southeast Asia, an inscrutable Buddha. The Japanese overran our borders and from our capital in Bangkok declared war on the United States. The green flames of the jungle consumed us. So the Buddha sits, arms folded on its bronze breast, its face expressionless.
But the eyes of the Buddha wink. Is that it?
The eyes wink, Lieutenant. Its ears are tuned to the enemy and the jeweled lips whisper. There are 50,000 Japanese here in Siam, my friend. We will continue to wait and watch and listen until they are driven out.
The next morning, Louis and I, with Lum driving, set out for Camp Punjara. Ever since my arrival in Bangkok, I had the feeling I was sitting on a powder keg that was liable to go off any minute. Driving through the streets in broad daylight didn't make me feel any better. But I figured the Siamese knew what they were doing. This time, nothing went wrong with the horn, but something else happened that gave me quite a turn. It sounds fantastic, and it was, but it really happened. A Jap MP directing traffic held up his hand, and the official car we were riding in stopped. I didn't like stopping. I felt better while we were on the move. Then, all of a sudden, I saw a Jap soldier looking curiously in the window, staring at my Occidental face. We looked at each other for a few seconds. Neither of us said a word. Then the car moved on.
Louis, that Jap soldier, he saw me.
I know.
Even with the civilian hat and the shirt over my uniform, he couldn't have mistaken me for a Siamese.
No doubt.
But if he saw me, Louis...
Put your mind at ease, my friend. I'm sure he doesn't believe what he thought he saw. And if later he convinces himself it was true and goes to his commanding officer, he will lose face for telling so ludicrous a tale.
You mean they won't believe him?
Oh, come now, Lieutenant Berman. What would an American be doing in Japanese-occupied Siam, driving along the streets in full daylight? Ridiculous, don't you think?
You have come to the right place, Lieutenant Berman.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Colonel Sangwan.
I have heard of the flyer you seek. I know the prison camp in which he is now being held.
Hey, that's great. When do we start?
And not so fast, Lieutenant. Huh? We must make plans first. This is not a matter to be undertaken lightly. Come, we will have dinner first, and then we will discuss the problem.
Dinner? Colonel Sangwan, I've been wined and dined ever since I got to Bangkok, but I haven't done a thing.
Ah, my wife, Tara. We will dine, then we will talk further.
Does my English surprise you, Lieutenant Berman? I was educated in America. I am a graduate of Wellesley College.
It was not your English which made the lieutenant observe you with such interest, my dear. It is your appearance. Am I not correct, Lieutenant?
You're very correct, Colonel. You have an extremely attractive wife.
Thank you both. My husband's lavish compliments embarrass me occasionally. I suppose they are to be expected after only 2 months of marriage.
2 months? Well, congratulations.
It is I who am to be congratulated.
A more coffee, Lieutenant?
Colonel Sangwan! Colonel Sangwan!
What is it, my dear?
Louis, what happened?
A car. Japanese Colonel Kishinami with many soldiers.
Colonel Kishinami? What could he want here?
He requests an audience with you.
Lieutenant, there's no time to lose. That screen. Quickly. Go behind it and pray to the great Buddha he does not stay around.
And you, Major, sit here in the lieutenant's place. Pretend it was your place. Quickly, quickly.
Nobody had to tell me to be quick. I got behind the bamboo screen, and Louis slid into my chair at the table. Then he stood up immediately with Sangwan as Kishinami came in, a great ornate sword swinging from his side. He stood so close to me, I could have reached out and touched that sword.
Would you care for some coffee, Colonel Kishinami?
No, thank you. Colonel Sangwan, I am here on official business.
Ah, yes, Colonel Kishinami. What can I do to help you?
We have discovered a clandestine airfield in this territory. Surely, it is not so close to this camp, without your knowledge.
Airfield? Oh, certainly, certainly. It was constructed as a temporary emergency landing field some years ago. It has been infrequently used.
Our observation shows it to be in excellent condition and indicates constant activity.
I cannot believe this. Let me accompany you and see this airfield. Taba, my dear, you will forgive me?
Of course. I will be here.
It happened so fast, I couldn't believe my eyes. As the Siamese colonel turned to say goodbye to his wife, that treacherous Jap sword was whipped out, and Sangwan was very neatly decapitated. Beheading Sangwan must have been the signal for the Jap soldiers in the room to take out their guns. But before they could do anything with them, Tabar sprung at Kishinami, and with a meat knife from the table, stabbed him through the heart. The Nip soldier tried to get at her, but Louis got him first. Then that powder keg I'd been sitting on really went off.
With their leader killed, they did not have much heart left for the fight. They are gone now.
But, Louis, I don't understand it.
Nor I.
What brought on the assassination of the colonel? That phony errand he came on was just an excuse to get in.
It is possible that the order has come for the total subjugation of our people by the Japanese. If true, it is open war from now on.
Will there be another attack tonight, you think?
If so, we are armed and ready. There is nothing to do but wait.
What about Tavar? Is there anything I can do for her?
No. She is one of my kind. It is best to let me console her, Lieutenant. Thank you on her behalf. For your kindness.
Married 2 months. What a lousy shame.
Go to your quarters. We will wait.
Nothing further occurred that night, but none of us slept. In the morning, a big black official limousine drove up. It was the Regent of Siam.
I have received an apology from the Japanese government for the incident last night. They are quite adept at apologizing.
My husband has been killed, and you call it an incident, Excellency?
Yeah, how about that?
It is my belief that the order for the subjugation of Siam had been issued by the Japanese High Command and rescinded because they did not believe the time appropriate.
But what about last night, Excellency?
Evidently, through some oversight or the difficulties of communication, Colonel Kishinami had not been warned that the plan was off. It is my belief that all will be quiet now for a while.
Shall we sit quietly once more and wait for them to attack us again while our backs are turned? There are many of us in the underground.
Tava is right.
Let us attack them. Let me avenge my husband.
Now listen, listen, wait a minute. You've played a waiting game so far. Wait a while longer. I know the fuse is burning close, but wait.
That time is past, Lieutenant.
Any open act on your part will really make the Japs crack down. Right now, Siam is the best listening post the Allies have in the East. Believe me, Washington knows what it's doing. You're a better help that way.
The Lieutenant is right. We will continue to be a docile puppet state and sell out the enemy to the Allies.
But, Your Excellency...
I say we will wait. I have myself promised President Roosevelt that we Siamese will continue to be loyal and silent. We will wait until we are told otherwise. Did you get the information you came after, Lieutenant?
No, Colonel Sangwan was going to give it to me before...
I know the camp you are looking for, Lieutenant. I will tell you what you want to know.
The Japanese prison camp at Korat is only about 5 minutes' drive now, Lieutenant. The object of your mission ends there.
We're taking a long chance, Louis.
You are the one who is taking the long chance.
You think it'll work, though, don't you?
I can only say I hope. When I turn you over to the Japanese commander as a prisoner, there is a strong possibility you will be thrown into the same stockade as the American flyer for whom you are looking.
And if I'm not, just being inside those gates will give me an opportunity to find out exactly where he is in that camp.
You find him. We will attend to the rest.
I hope I can count on that.
Trust us.
Halt! Look out there!
Major Prayadipak from the region. I have a prisoner for Colonel Inotu.
Very well. Pass.
I am indeed indebted to you for bringing this prisoner to me, Major.
I have brought him, Colonel Inotu, with the compliments of the Regent of Siam. Is it not to be expected, since we Siamese are the allies and the friends of the...
Of course, of course. You will be cooperative and answer my questions. You understand?
I don't know any answers.
How did you get here?
He just told you my plane crashed near the border.
What was your mission? How many were with you? Were you headed for a secret airport in Siam? Which one? Where is it? Who is your contact?
You're crazy. I haven't any contact. I tell you, I just crashed.
This American is going to be stubborn, I fear, Major.
Give him time. He will break down. They all do.
Unfortunately, they do not. The American flyer we have had interned here for some months has resisted all our efforts to obtain the truth.
Is it not possible he has told you all he knows?
Oh, come, come, Major. You Siamese are too trusting.
Perhaps, Colonel Inotu. Perhaps you are right.
American, I will have you taken to the stockade where I ask you, take good look at the other flyer. Look well at him. Know that our worst fate awaits you if you do not cooperate. Sergeant.
Yes, Colonel Inotu.
Throw the prisoner in the stockade on the west side of the camp. I will deal with him later.
I tried to hide the way I felt about being thrown together with the very man I had come all the way to Siam to find. I walked past Louis without looking at him. But out of the corner of my eye, I saw that his face was coolly impassive.
Here I will go, America!
It took me a couple of minutes to get used to the darkness. And then the darkness took form, and I saw a figure huddled in a corner. An emaciated, bearded figure, wearing an American uniform. Lieutenant Davis.
Who are you?
Friend. American. Are you all right? Can you hear me? Can you understand me? I've come to get you out of here.
Come here closer. Let me see you. You are an American. I don't believe it.
Colonel Inotu told me to take a good look at you. I am. Now I'd like to go back and take a good swing at him. You heard that?
What are you doing here? Who are you?
Lieutenant Berman of the OSS. General Chenault asked me to find you.
Find me? Get me out of here.
Listen. Wait, don't talk. Don't talk. Just listen to me. He listened all right. And even in the semi-darkness, I could see the light come back into his eyes at the idea of getting out of that place. At about 7 o'clock in the evening, the Jap guard outside the stockade was changed. The new sentry brought us in some food.
Here, eat this. It is the best I could do.
Lum, is it really you? Oh, this is better than I hoped.
The Japanese guard whose place I took was willing to pay attention to a little bribe. Japanese soldiers are so underpaid, you know.
Lieutenant Davis, this is Lum, a Siamese, a friend.
Can you get us out of here?
We have a plan. Tonight, when the moon is low, I will turn my back and you two will make a run for it. Try to escape.
Oh, I'll never make it.
No, of course not. You will be shot in the attempt and killed.
Sorry, Lum, I don't think much of that idea. Haven't you got any others?
I have no finish. Listen. I will only pretend to shoot you. You will only pretend to die.
Huh?
The Japanese soldier who was bribed and one other who has accepted our money will get to you quickly, stand over you. A Siamese doctor in the camp will pronounce you dead. Leave the rest to us.
No, it won't work. It won't work.
Lieutenant Davis, if the Siamese say it'll work, give them a chance. When the moon was low, and at a signal from Lum, we broke out and made a run for it.
Stop! Stop! We
heard the shots, we threw ourselves face down on the ground and held our breaths. Stretched out like that without moving, our eyes closed, everything that happened around us after that seemed to be a crazy dream.
We got the both of them.
I fear, Colonel Inotu. They are already sorry.
Who's that, Doctor? What did you say?
These Americans, Colonel Inotu. They are both very dead.
Dead?
What shall we do with them, Colonel? I await your orders.
Do with them. If they are dead, bury them, of course. Take them to the cemetery and bury them.
Now that our plan has worked, Lieutenant Berman, I may as well tell you, I was never sure it would turn out this successfully.
But, Louis, you did have this pain already and warming up at the cemetery.
We Siamese are eternal optimists.
The graves are dug, Major. What shall we do?
We will say goodbye to our friends, the Americans, first, Long. Then we will go back and throw the dirt over the empty graves in case Colonel Inotu comes to inspect them.
A plane. To get on a plane again. Out of this place. A plane going home.
I pray, Lieutenant Davis, that you will both return to our land one day in happier times. I assure you of a greater welcome and far greater hospitality. And now, goodbye and a pleasant journey.
Just before we took off, Major Laudol Praya Deepak presented each of us with a green velvet box. In them were cufflinks of pure gold and pounded ruby dust, with the initials AM for the boy king, Ananda Mayidol, and a golden crown for the mark of the dynasty. A royal present from the king of Siam. As we looked down, we could see Lum and the two bribed Jap soldiers with Louis directing operations, shoveling the dirt in over our graves.
Thus, on April 18, 1944, Lieutenant Davis, the missing pilot of the Flying Tigers, was rescued from the Japanese prison camp and rejoined his unit. And once again, the report of another OSS agent closed with the words,
"Mission accomplished."
Listen again next week for another true adventure from the files of the OSS on
Cloak and Dagger.
Heard in today's Cloak and Dagger adventure were Grant Richards, Everett Sloan, Ralph Bell, Barry Kroger, Raymond Edward Johnson, Eileen Heckert, Carl Weber, Martin Balsam, and Jerry Jarrett. Script was written by Winifred Wolfe and Jack Gordon. Music was under the direction of John Garth. Today's true OSS adventure was based on the book Cloak and Dagger by Corey Ford and Alistair McBain. This has been a Lewis D. Cowan production in association with Alfred Hollander and was under the direction and supervision of Sherman Marks.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.